Hello, everybody. My name's TJ, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, TJ.
Okay, so I see exactly two people there, and they're on Zoom, that were here when I got here. Fortunately, I could lie, and none of you would know except those two.
Although I've heard your story.
So, let me start off by telling you how I take people through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a little bit of experience with this, but I had absolutely no idea what the hell I was doing. And one of the reasons that I swore that I had no idea what I was doing is because I wasn't the sharpest tack in the box. And I thought, I'm reading this stuff out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have no idea what I'm reading. Absolutely no idea. So, my sobriety date is October 16th of 1987. And about 12 years after that, I was given the opportunity to go to a 12-step study group, and I think it was called, I know it was called the Joe and Charlie tapes. And two people from New York brought this Joe and Charlie thing, and I thought, well, that's interesting, because they took the big book and they put it in plain, ordinary, good old-fashioned English that I could understand. And which made some sense to me. And then about a year or so later, someone introduced me to Joe McHugh's book, The Steps We Took. And I went through a class, a 12-week class, or what I called a class, of this Joe McHugh book, The Steps We Took. And I thought, this was absolutely spectacular. For me, it was exactly what the big book was talking about, written in English that I could understand. And the very next year I did the same thing. You know, I did the same class, or what I called a class. And then the following year they asked me to facilitate the class, and I went, no. I'm really not any good at this. And they said, yes, you'll be great at this. So I did that for a few years. And then I was having some other folks ask me to do some, you know, one-on-one type classes or whatever, to take different people through the steps. And lo and behold, one of the things that I understood right off the bat was, I have never learned anything except in hindsight. When I look back on all the stuff that I did, that's where I see the progress that I've made. And I'm going to sneak over here real quick for a second and get my equipment out. So when I take people through the steps, the first thing they have to have is one of these. And one of these, which is The Steps We Took. And I have Carry the Message. And they gave me this after I went through this book. They gave me this book. Now, none of these are probably conference-approved literature. But I learned, this is a guide to big book sponsorship, and I learned so much out of this book. So when I take people through the steps, that's exactly what I'm doing, is I'm reading out of this book. And so that's kind of what I'm going to do for you folks tonight. And the first part of when I go through these books, is the first thing I do is I ask my sponsee to write on the very first page of their big book, you know, the cover of the big book, I have them write, I am willing to go to any length to get and stay sober. And every time they question me about something I might say, and they tell me how much crap that is, I ask them to go back to that first page and tell me what it is they wrote. And it's amazing. Every time I have a question, or I think I know better than everybody else, I go back to that first page and go, oh yeah, that's right. I'm willing to go to any length to get and stay sober. So the first part of homework would be to read the doctor's opinion and then to read Bill's story. That's the first two chapters in the big book. When I read the doctor's opinion, what I was reading the first time through was wah, 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 wah. And that was it. However, I came across on page, I think it's page 2, and that it relates our disease to an allergy. Now, when I came in, I had all kinds of allergies. I was doing allergy shots and all that stuff, and I thought, now that makes sense to me, is that someone has an allergy. So when he said I could never use alcohol safely again, I kind of understood that. But when I first got here, I didn't really believe I was an alcoholic. When I first got here, I thought I got here by accident or mistake. And I'll get into maybe a little bit more of that later. The other thing that caught my attention was this phenomena of craving. And that didn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense to me either, but it caught my attention. It wasn't until I actually read chapter 3 and could understand it. Now, I'll tell you that I read the big book my very first year that I was in the program. But again, what I read was wah, 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 wah. None of it made any sense to me. So lo and behold, you know, way down the road, I read this little piece in chapter three, more about alcoholism. And what caught my attention, and it really convinced me that I was really an alcoholic, was this line. It says, all of us felt at times that we were regaining control. But such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control. That's exactly what was happening to me. And I thought every time I tried to slow down, every time I tried to taper off, because that was always my plan, I'll just taper off, it seemed like I was drinking more. And I thought, now that makes absolutely no sense. And then I read it right here in chapter 3. Also, it's chapter 3 also contains my favorite part in the big book. And my favorite part in the big book is, suddenly the thought crossed my mind. To me, that's what explains the absolute insanity of the first drink. that I had no mental defense against that first drink. Okay, so back to where I started with. Step one. Step one names the problem. That's the very first thing, is it names the problem. And I would ask, does anybody know what the problem is? Confused the hell out of me. I thought the problem was that I drank too much. That's not the problem. What I figured out was that was not the problem. Oh, yeah, I did drink too much. There's no doubt about that. But that wasn't the problem. And the big book, or in the step, tells us exactly what the problem is. See, in order to solve any problem, first you have to know what the problem is. Second thing you need to know is what the solution is. And the third thing you need to know is the plan of action. Guess where I got all that? In here. And the proof that I have of that is, if you read Dr. Bob's story, or if you know any of the history about Alcoholics Anonymous, Dr. Bob was in the Oxford groups for 2.5 years and could not get sober. And the reason that he couldn't get sober, he knew what the solution was, and he had a plan of action, the tenets of the Oxford group. So he knew all of that. What he didn't know was what the problem was. So what's the problem? How's the first step go? You're powerless. So what's the problem? Powerlessness. That's my problem. I'm powerless. I'm powerless over alcohol. Now, there is another part to that. We'll get to that. But I'm powerless over this stupid liquid. What? That makes no sense to me. So the problem must be alcohol. No, it's not. Not for me, it's not. It's powerlessness. And until as long as I can think, as long as I know for sure that I have power over this, whatever it is, I am never going to stop drinking. Never in a million years. As soon as I am powerless over something, that begins the process of figuring out what the problem is. I was powerless. I couldn't stop drinking because I was powerless to stop drinking, if that makes any sense to anybody. The solution, that comes next week. The program of action, that comes a couple weeks down. So Dr. Bob had exactly 2 out of the 3 things, but he didn't have the most important thing. And guess who brought it to him? Bill W. Guess who brought it to Bill W.? Abby Thatcher. And guess who brought it to Abby Thatcher? Roland Hazzard. Where did he get it from? Some guy named Carl Jung, Dr. Carl Jung. That's where he got it from. And so people knew about what was happening in alcoholics long before Bob and Bill got together. They just didn't know how to put it together. At least that's my thoughts. When you're working with a new person, as in myself, I could not see where I was so powerless over alcohol. That didn't make any sense to me. It was a clear liquid. It actually was for me, my magic elixir. Because when I first got, before I got here, you know, that was my medicine. That made me okay with myself. That made me okay in my own skin. That made everything pop for me. You know, the first time I got drunk, my first thought was, damn, that was wonderful. I can't wait to do that again. Now, a lot of you know my story. You know, I had thrown up all over myself. I had knocked myself out. It was horrible. But I couldn't wait to do it again. I was powerless from the very get-go. At least, I think I was. So as long as I think I can solve the problem, I'm not going to be able to do anything until I admit defeat, until I surrender. So when Kevin asked me to do this 2 years ago, 5 years ago, however long ago it was, I said, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this because I don't want to put myself out there. I don't want you to think that I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't want you. And all of that are just character defects. And I didn't calm down about all of this until a few seconds ago. But I knew that one day I would have to stand up here and do this. So a couple of weeks ago, I surrendered. Now, you may think that's, oh, that's really kind of pushing the step a little bit, don't you think? And the truth of it is no. When I first got here, my first sponsor said to me, you're going to take these steps and you're going to integrate them into your life. And I went, yeah, right, whatever. But that's exactly what I've done. I surrender all the time to problems. So I knew what the problem was. I didn't want to do this. I knew that there was a solution, and I knew what the plan of action was going to be. I just, you know, at first I didn't realize that I just didn't want to do this, but that was really the problem, is I was powerless over my own thoughts in my head. So anyway, I used the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to get through this. And that's what I'm going to do as we go along here. So, as far as the second part of this goes, glad you left them all right here. That our lives had become unmanageable. I tried to manage everything all on my own. I never wanted help for anything. Now, I know it sounds like we're kind of getting into step two a little bit, but the truth of it is, I really thought I could do this on my own. And again, if you think you can still do this on your own, you haven't surrendered yet. If you still harbor that idea that somewhere, some way, somehow, I'll be able to manage this, and your screen just went blank, happens. Oh, you already knew that. Okay. Anyway, so if you harbor anything that tells you that you can someday, one day, I can drink safely, or I can drink somehow differently, then you haven't surrendered yet. Okay? And you still think your life is manageable. Which tells me that you're living on self-will. See, self-will has tunnel vision. I can't see what's out here. I only see what's right in front of me, right here. So it's kind of like trying to put things together wrong. In one of these books that I read, it talks about the person going through. See, most of you are too young to remember this. Do anybody remember the green stamp store?
Sure.
Okay, so some of you remember the green stamp store. So if you bought something, they gave you these green stamps, and you pasted them in a book, and then you could go to this store and turn your books in of all these green stamps, and you could buy stuff with it. All of it had to be put together. All of it, everything you bought had to somehow be put together, okay? Well, what did I do with that? Well, first of all, if I'm putting this stuff together, if I'm actually going to pick up the instructions, that insults my intelligence. So I'm going to throw the damn instructions away.
Right.
Inevitably, I put it together wrong. And I got to take it apart again. And I might try a couple of times. But eventually, I'm reaching for that stupid instructions. Because I'm trying to live my life on self-will. I relate it to putting a puzzle together. Anybody ever put a puzzle together? Of course you have. And you're searching for pieces. And there are these little itty-bitty pieces. And I grab that piece. And I go, oh, that piece goes right here. And boom, I try to put it there. And it doesn't fit. Looks like it should fit. But it doesn't fit. So I take that piece and I put it back where I found it, and everything should be okay. I know I'm running over, aren't I? So I'm looking around for that piece again, and I see that piece again, and I go, I pick that same piece up again, and I put it in the same damn spot, and guess what? It still doesn't fit. So I think to myself, okay, well, I'm not going to put it there again. Now I'm going to put it over here. And I'll know the next time I see that not to put it there. Inevitably, you know what's coming. I see that piece and I try to put it in the same spot. Is my life unmanageable? Yeah. Yeah. It's a stupid piece of the puzzle. I can't put it together. I need help. And it'll drive me crazy until I find that piece that goes there. Is my life unmanageable? Now, I know that sounds like it's really simple, but for me, that's how simple I had to make it. So, when I'm surrendering to all that stuff, what I'm doing is I'm saying, look, I have a problem and I don't know how to fix it, and I need help to fix it. So what I'm actually doing is I'm giving up on self-reliance. Okay, I'm not going to rely on myself anymore. And in the steps we took on page 20, it says, we humans are not meant to depend on our individual selves. We are meant to rely on each other. God doesn't intend us to be self-reliant. We are designed, as our principles spell out, to rely on each other. We want to be self-propelled, but we can't be. Human beings surely aren't capable of operating without energy from God and from each other. Step 1, we give up on being self-propelled, self-directed, and self-reliant. So step one is twofold. The first thing it does is it names the problem for me, powerlessness. Second thing it does, it admits defeat, which means I'm finally going to face the truth about me. The great thing about step one is it sets us up for step two. You are now set up for step two. But I'm going to tell you again, it is very difficult to have your to explain any of this to your sponsee. You cannot drag them through step one. You need to, beyond a shadow of a doubt, you need to allow them to experience that and to understand that. The only thing you can do is help them see it. You can point it out to them, but if they can't see it, they can't see it. You can't beat them over the head with a baseball bat, although I've wanted to on a time or two. And I know damn good and well that every sponsor I've ever had that has taken me through the steps has wanted to do the exact same thing. That's all I got. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you, TJ. So now we have time for questions. Is there anybody here that would like to start us off with a question for TJ?
Hey, good job, Linda Alcoholic.
Thanks.
I just wondered when you started admitting you were powerless, like over alcohol, but then you were like, actually other things in your life, basically everything. Like, I don't know if you're gonna admit this because you're a guy, but maybe you will. Like, did you notice yourself crying more? Did you notice rage? Did you notice, you know, any range of emotions?
Well, when I first got sober, yeah, there was a huge range of emotions. Oh my goodness. And I didn't know what they were. So I did find myself doing things like crying or having emotions that I didn't understand or feel. And you're right. When we're talking about alcohol. Alcoholism. But there are many, 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 many things that I am completely powerless over. That's why what you're going to do is you're going to take these 12 steps and integrate them into your life all the time. You're powerless over a whole lot of things. I was absolutely powerless this afternoon when I had to take my wife to her therapy appointment at 4:00. And I said, dear, you do realize that I'm supposed to be at the fire hall at 5. And she said, I can't help that. I know you can't. There is nothing I can do about that. I said, well, we start speaking at 5:30. And the therapist said, I will have you out of here before 5. I got home back to my house at 5. So she was right. I was, as I'm sitting there patiently waiting, gnawing on my tongue, was I powerless? Yep, completely. And it would have been a lot easier on my tongue had I had admitted defeat and just said, you know, it is what it is. Probably been a lot easier on my stomach too. Yeah, you're going to do this a lot.
Hey,
does that answer your question?
Good honesty, yeah. Very good.
Don't fall asleep.
Hi, TJ. Thank you. So, I'm going to try to make sense out of it, or so you can understand it. Because my husband, I confuse him, so I'll try this. So, do you see, sometimes I feel like when I don't get something, that's supposed to be simple. I don't know if it's because I'm powerless over or I'm just stupid. So let me explain that. So I'm trying to get into my daughter's house with the new code. She's selling her house. I did that thing 3 times and I could not get it. She and my daughter did the same thing and there it was, opened right up. I'm like, so what's wrong with me? So here's what I do. When people say, go here, go there, I cannot read maps. I absolutely cannot read maps. I am either stupid or something's closed off. I just don't do it and won't do it. So I borrowed my husband's car one time, and I'm an old timer where I like a key for my car, not the fob thing. I'm just used to. So I got in it, and doggone it, the car won't work. And I'm feeling, see, there I go again. If there's something I do wrong, there's something I do wrong. And I tried, and I tried, and I tried. And I kept saying, dismiss, dismiss. So I just sat there and said, what's wrong with me? And I turned around, looked in the back seat, and there was a big white cat in the back seat because I was in the wrong car. Now, is that stupid, or is that because I didn't try hard enough to get it right the first time?
You want me to answer that?
Run, TJ.
I do that stuff.
Okay, so
fire alarm.
So here's what I'm going to tell you. Is one of the things that I know for me, especially when I first came into the program, is I spent a whole lot of time, and the Serenity Prayer talks about this, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, and the courage to change the things I can. I spent an awful lot of time reversing that. Okay? I spent an awful lot of times accepting things that I could change and trying to change things that I couldn't. The best part of that comes from the wisdom to know the difference. And I think that wisdom comes from A, experience, and B, a higher power. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay.
It does, thank you.
Hi, TJ. Ryan, alcoholic.
Hi, Ryan, and if you make this hard...
That won't be hard.
Okay.
When you said you first started to come to the meetings that you were thinking, this isn't going to work, and I don't know what this is all about, and you were thinking you did have some power over it and it could just taper off, when you first started to come to get involved in AA, did you think it could teach you how to drink again?
No, so when I first got here, here was my plan. Because every good drunk has a plan. I'll come, I'll sit in the back, and I'll listen to these people for 6-8 months, maybe. And then, because work was paying attention, and they wanted me to go to a lot of meetings, so I went to like 6 meetings a week. And then I thought, okay, after about 6 months, I could taper off to like 2 or 3 meetings a week. And then by the end of a year, that's when the script on my antabuse ran out, if anybody remembers what that was. Then I could just kind of slide right on out the door and begin to drink again. And my plan was, if I ever get that bad again, I'll know right where to go. I won't have to do this detox thing and this rehab thing. I'll just come right back to AA. You guys will teach me. You guys will dry me out again. And I'll be able to do the same thing. That was my thinking. So yes, I thought for sure I'd learn how to drink. That didn't work out so well.
Who else has a question?
Thank you, TJ. Renee, alcoholic. This is actually a very simple question. I did not catch the name, the last name of Roland. What was that last name?
Roland Hazard.
Thank you.
Who else has a question?
Oh.
Thank you, God.
Hello. Hello.
My name's Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
I know you told me not to ask any questions, but Kevin said I could.
What does he know?
I don't know. He doesn't know much. Anyways, when you work with new people, the first step comes back to you. Do you start to relive those days, even though it's been a very long time?
Yes. As I was researching this, I went back to some of the first meetings I ever went to. And there were, a lot of the people are gone now, but there are still some that are still around. And I remember them telling me, I'll tell you, the one guy that I remember a lot was Old Stoneface. You remember him? Mraz. Joe Mraz. Yeah. And he, as I was struggling so mightily on step one, he stuck his big fat finger in my face and in my chest, and he backed me up against one of the walls, and he said to me, if you can't find happiness in this program, see if you can go find happiness on a damn bar stool. And I thought, does he know who the hell he's talking to? Obviously he did. So yeah, I do go back to those early days. And honestly, I didn't like my first couple of years of sobriety. They weren't pretty.
Who else has a question?
I am Richie. I'm a member of AA.
Hey, Richie.
TJ, that was amazing. And I, you talked about how you take sponsees through the steps now. Did you always take your sponsees through the steps that way? Or did you maybe try something else that didn't work? Like, what made you do it the way you do it now, as opposed to, did you try it another way before?
Well, what I did, the first guy I tried to sponsor, we just sat down and read the big book together, because that's what my sponsor did for me. Not that it really did me a whole heck of a lot, well, it did do me a whole heck of a lot of good, but so once we got through, you know, the first three chapters, or the first four chapters, I figured we were on step four. Or step three from there. So that's how I took the first guy I ever sponsored through the steps. He's not with us anymore. He didn't make it, but I did. And it wasn't until I went to sponsor another guy, probably in the, like, 12 years into my sobriety, that I realized that he actually introduced me to the Joe McHugh books, if that makes any sense. So yeah, I did try other ways, but working through this book made so much more sense to me. Working through this book made the big book come alive for me so that I could understand it. One of the things I didn't tell you is that when I got here, I really had a hard time reading. I could read a paragraph, you know, in a half an hour and fall asleep three times in that half hour, and it was awful. I mean, so I didn't understand or retain anything first couple of times that I read the big book. It just didn't make any sense to me. It's written in an old English style, and I don't know, I would have said to you, boy, I wish they would have changed that, but the truth of it is, I hope they leave it alone, at least the first 164 pages, because it makes it, kind of makes it mysterious for me, if that makes any sense.
So TJ, regarding the word power, I struggle with this sometimes. I have felt in my lifetime that I was powerless over some of the things that happened to me in my life. And as I got older and wanted to do the steps and deal with those things, I thought and fought for the power to be able to not put myself, let me be more specific. I was abused for years and years and years. And when I got to the point where I hated so many men that did things to me, that I decided to take my power and tell everybody no, like to protect myself, take that power and protect myself. So do you think that power in your head is sometimes a falsehood? Do we go there and maybe we don't have that power? Maybe we still have that powerlessness? And I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Well, it does, and that will come to light as we continue working the steps. But the truth of it is, the power comes from somewhere, mm-hmm. and it ain't you or me.
Good answer. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
No.
No.
Perfect answer. Anyway, thank you for doing this. I'm glad that, you know, we finally got to my favorite speaker.
I didn't know you. I wasn't here when you first came in, but when I came back to Erie, and I've heard you say yourself that the first couple years that you were, angry.
You could call it that.
You could call it anger, okay.
Yeah.
So, how did you apply that step, or how, when you were working with your sponsor and you're continually angry and frustrated and all the things that come up these first couple of years of your sobriety, was it just time that it eventually dissipated, or was there that first step or the surrender or the powerlessness or whatever the first step kick in?
I think the powerlessness began to kick in, and I think I talked about this a little bit, when I was reading and understanding the third chapter of the big book, when it talks about that I had felt at times that I was regaining control of my alcoholism while I was drinking, and then only to realize that I actually had less control. And I think when I started reading that and understanding that in the third chapter, that it made sense to me. The other thing in the third chapter that it talks about, and I said this already, was when he talks about the car salesman that goes, and you remember about the car salesman, and he goes out into the country to see if he can sell a car to somebody, and he stops at his favorite bar, okay, and all he goes in there for is a glass of milk and a sandwich. Now, I can relate to that because whenever I eat a sandwich, I love having a glass of milk. I never asked for one at a bar, but I would have been embarrassed about that. But you know, he goes in there and he drinks this milk and this sandwich and everything, and it tastes so good. And suddenly, the thought occurred to him that putting an ounce of whiskey in his milk would not hurt him. And I thought to myself, first of all, ew, who would put an ounce of whiskey in their milk? And then my second thought was, why didn't I try that? And I was pretty convinced that, you know, maybe the light bulb went off then, I don't know. But, yeah.
So was it anger or frustration?
A little of both. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
You're so full of.
Thank you, TJ. So we invite you back next week. TJ is going to be speaking on steps 2 and 3. So I want to be here for that. Do we have any other announcements from membership?
Yes. Oh, specifically for Kevin.
Oh,
so
good.
Saturday night at the Fairview meeting at 8 o'clock, Ray Winger is leaving. So in case you want
to... My heart be still.
Any other announcements?